So Alexa is a Los Angeles-based artist, and she is very well known for her painting on people, I think is the way I would describe it. She's very creative, and in my brief experience with Alexa, this sort of spills out into all parts of her life, and I think we're about to see this. She's exhibited all over the world, in Tokyo, and in Paris, and in London, and various places in the US, so it's a great privilege for us to have her here at PI, and let's thank her again.
Hello, I'm Alexa, and I first want to just like thank you guys so much for having me here as part of this program. I'm going to first start with an introduction on some of my artwork that you guys may have seen around PI, and then later on in the talk I'm going to show some of my side projects and some of my ideas for the residency. So you guys may already know that this is not actually a painting on canvas, but this is a real man sitting in a chair covered in paint, painted on his toes, painted on the shoes next to him, and in the way I painted it, it makes a dimension seem to disappear, and like it's a two-dimensional painting, when really it's fully alive, it's human. Doesn't matter what angle it's photographed at, it'll still look like a two-dimensional painting. And I came across this quite by accident. I was studying politics at Vassar College. I'd grown up in DC, was totally obsessed with politics. I hadn't painted since I was a kid at summer camp. And I had this idea that I would put black paint down on shadows. So I took my friend Bernie and I asked him, you know, I'm going to be putting paint on you. I have no idea what this is going to look like. And much to my surprise, I realized that it was creating this interesting illusion of flatness. And I had no idea this would happen when I started out. I was just interested in capturing the gradient of light along his body. So I decided, instead of getting a job in politics, where you know I had trained really hard and worked on campaigns and everything else, to just ditch that entire path and see what would happen if I tried to become an artist. It was really hard to get people to model for me in the early days, so I ended up painting on things like food. I had to cook several different versions of eggs because the yolk kept breaking. And then with the toast, the paint just like fell straight to the bottom because it was like a sponge. And the sausage was like off. Gassing slash like oozing out like fat that was breaking through the paint. And so I think there's a good reason why people actually paint on canvas and not on these things. But canvas doesn't really interest me. I'm more interested in space and dimensionality. My early subjects were oftentimes myself. This was one of my first self-portraits. And I also forgot to paint my ear, which you can catch up there. I don't usually use a laser pointer, so I'm going to be abusing this privilege today. So ever since then, I am very much aware that I need to put paint on ears, which you'll see more of later. One of my early models was also an older man who let me take him on the subway. A lot of people on the train were very confused. They didn't really quite know if they were allowed to stare. So I found that the minute he turned his back, everyone would then look up, but as he was coming, they'd avert their eyes. I started practicing and painting in all different styles, just making up things. In this piece originally, it was just a plain green shirt, blue pants, plain red background, and it was for a big art show opening I had. And then, like, it was a few hours before the art show opening, I decided, you know, this was too bland, I don't like this, and I thought about completely throwing everything away. And then I found a giant Sharpie, and I just did, like, a big, like, X through it, because I was angry and 23. And I was like, shoot. That's a one-way decision. How do I go back from there? So I decided instead to just build up layers of black Sharpie so you can't see my original X anymore and you just see texture instead. And it turned into one of my most well-known pieces, which was amazing because I thought it was going to be a total disaster. This piece was also an example of something where things kind of changed at the last minute. So this was for an art show at the Grand Palais in Paris, and I was doing a live art installation there for 4 days. I painted this for the first day, and I thought that every day for the next couple days, I would have a new model come back, they'd put on the same clothes, I'd stand in front of the same background, and that would be my installation for the 4 days. After the first day, the gallery told me, oh, you need to do something totally different for tomorrow. And I was like, I'd spent all week planning this. So I decided to actually just build upon that and add some more color on it. And each day I added another layer of color. So the painting evolved over the course of the show. Street art, it's alive and like real street art, you know, can be there one day and gone the next. This was part of a collaboration I did with performance artist Sheila Vant. I painted on her, and then she lied down in a swimming pool full of milk, and the paint would bleed off her body into the milk and form these beautiful patterns that we could have never planned for. I'll show you guys more milk pictures in a secondary slideshow during Q&A. But a lot of people oftentimes want to know what it's like to be painted. It's me painting my boyfriend.
She's painting in my ear right now.
That is, I should have given you that.
Which is a wet willy feeling, man.
A cold wet willy, which is even more unsettling. I'm enjoying this. I don't usually enjoy it. I usually am very quick when I do that for my other models, but my boyfriend that day, I was giving him extra cold wet willies in the ear. I love just having fun with the whole process. And I also love doing more collaborations. So this is with the magician David Blaine. And for his book on magic, he wanted to, for the cover, be painted like the King of Spades. And so then this was in process, and then I finished painting him, and we were like, okay, great, we're done. And then David insisted that we go outside. And it was raining that day in New York, and I was like, it's gonna melt the paint, this isn't a good idea. And then he insisted on walking down middle of Broadway in the rain with cars honking behind us. And I was like, I'm gonna just step onto the sidewalk while you do that. It was really fun, very dangerous. Another project I did with David was I painted him in my style, which I would typically do. But we wanted to add some twist onto it. And now you guys might know that David Blaine is the world record holder for the person holding his breath for the longest underwater. It's something like 17 minutes. And so he just happens to have a water tank in his living room that he practices holding his breath in. So I painted him, he went underwater. And of course, it had to get crazier from there. He was just constantly swallowing fish and then regurgitating them. The portrait, I think, in the end, didn't really look like a painting. It didn't work out. And we realized that very quickly, that the second he went completely underwater, all the paint fell off, and we were like tapping on the aquarium glass, be like, David, it's okay. And then he was just putting more fish in his mouth. And so my favorite collaboration's actually been with my boyfriend, Chris Hughes. Together, we're turning our house into a fun house. We've been working on this project for over 2 years now. It's in LA. And when you first enter the house, the stairs are a rainbow, of course. And then I have reflective mylar foil on both sides, so the rainbow reflects back and forth. And as you walk up the stairs, it's quite trippy. And I would recommend not walking down the stairs while drunk, because you will trip and maybe die. There's no hand railing. Pretty much every spot in my house is part of my studio, so I spray paint in the hall. I have creative storage solutions, because everything is multi-purpose, so trap doors in the floor. I also keep in the trapdoor buried treasure, my costume jewelry. One time my parents sent me this weird money about like possibly laundering me money. So I put it under there, and then the termites actually ate it. So it ended up being like this Swiss cheese letter. I really should have taken a photo of it, but it was perfect. If you want to like destroy any evidence very slowly over time, my floor is great. We of course also have holes in the ceiling where you can jump down. Trying to make my bedroom feel like a swimming pool. Just playing with rainbows any way I can, spinning umbrellas. Our kitchen has a breakfast nook. It's this tiny area. It's like a little more than shoulder width, maybe like 2.5 meters long. And it doubles not only as a breakfast nook, but also as a dance club and as a tool for driving my cat crazy. See, if you'll notice that the colors of the rainbow seem to independently change color depending on what color light is shining on them. Turns into a pretty crazy dance party in there. So you saw this piece of artwork in there. That's just construction paper that I'd cut out, glued to a piece of whiteboard. There's nothing special about that paper at all. But with the color-changing lights on it, it turns into something just like completely out of this world. It's like it's animating on its own. And one of the millions of ideas I have for PI is to create something here that involves some like self-performing animation like that, not necessarily with words, but I'd love to brainstorm with you guys about all sorts of ideas. So anyways, our club is so hot that people have to have wristbands to get in. We'll typically have like a bouncer who'll make people like line up around the hall, down the stairs, even if the club is totally empty, just to, you know, maintain the vibe. And so news of our club actually spread to Germany, which is like, you know, got like the greatest club scene in Berlin, and German TV came out to do a feature on our little dance club. They also were really surprised when we showed them what was inside my bathroom closet. And when you put on these diffraction grating glasses, the whole world turns to rainbows. You feel colors touching you all over your body, and it's just like synesthesia and so magical and tactile. And just really fun to plan. In our bathroom, we have Yield Giftschoppe, which you're required to pass through as you exit the bathroom closet. And we have all sorts of non-traditional items in there. I mean, you obviously see, oh, I really wanted to abuse a laser pointer. Okay, well, so we got unicorn meat, and then here, you can't really read it, but that's a piece that was inspired by this song called Bubble Butt. And that is ye olde bubble butt plug. And I have my own currency for the gift shop because, of course, we can't take, you know, other currency. That's not good there. This is almost like a quantum currency because it's, okay, laser pointer. Oh, there we go. Okay. So there, that's UP, up, DN, down, down, up. And so in this one coin, regardless of how you flip it, it says either up or down, and then if you turn it over, it's also up or down. So it exists in these multiple states at the same time. And I have some extras if you guys need any like quantum currency. And we, since you know our medicine cabinet is a gift shop, the bathroom closet is this weird dangly thing. Of course, we had to transform our bedroom closet, and this is called the Space Age Lounge with the subtitle, the hopes and dreams of the 1960s for the future of space travel. So it's supposed to feel like very patriotic in there and like the ideas of space, but you know, from 50 years ago. It's not quite done yet. If anyone wants to come up to LA and help me, you know, finish it, I would love that. My TV set, of course, doesn't work quite as planned. Those are LED lights back there that work on a remote control. Channel 2 is color. Channel 3 is public access. Okay, sorry, that's loud. So anyone can go back there and they can have their own show.
The feel-good family film you've all been waiting for in an outpost in space.
Yeah, and so of course we have a prop cabinet right next to it where you can put on wigs and whatever TV persona you're going to be for that day. Or, you know, we can do a call-in show where, you know, we're talking to you on your cell phone in there. Our guest book is having anyone who passes through our house stand against the wall and measuring their height on the wall right behind them. And so that's my boyfriend measuring his little brother, who's 31 years old. And every time people come, they can measure themselves and see if they've grown. And so you'll see there that Joshua Leonard was wearing a hat that day. So he's taller than anywhere else he might be on that wall. I've also been playing with making toys. These are these blocks that like balance in a weird way. Like, how is that sticking out there? I can make like a set for you guys if you want to play with them. They're also really satisfying to tumble. Yeah. So I'm also working on some other toys, which I'm going to show you on this table over here. Oh, the camera should be moving over here. Okay, so these are these pieces that are all with the same type of curved edge. So that allows everything to fit together in a really beautiful way. So you can really easily create these cool tessellations. You can fill out this template. When you're done with it, you can lift it up, start over, and make more. And it's like an incredibly meditative thing to play with. Whenever I feel stuck, I just like start touching this and making things, and then like something comes to me. It's really great for getting into flow state. It's not commercially available or anything, so if you want a chance to play with them while I'm here, is your time. There's also something else I'm working on, which this is like totally top secret, so don't tell anyone, including online video, cut this out. So I found this special fabric downtown LA. It's called Reversible Sequins. And when you touch it, it changes colors. I know, it's so cool. You guys are gonna have to pet this. So I decided I wanted to see if, you know, what I could play with and make with that. So this is like a drawing board here where I spray painted one side to be rainbow, and you can erase as you go. So in addition to doing just like a drawing tool, I'm trying to think about, okay, how can I make this into a children's book? And so this is like such a work in progress, and I'd really love you guys to like give me feedback, ideas for what I should do for pages. So for example, if you have like a lion, you can add spots and make a cheetah. You can add stripes, and now it's a tiger. You can make it all black, and you get a panther. And so I had to think of concepts for what would be on each page, where it's something that could exist as between several different states, so that it's neither one or the other, but kind of can be everything at the same time. You know, necktie, become like a designer of that. If you go hiking and you see leaves of three, poison ivy, you might get poison ivy and have to scratch your leg. This was inspired by a flea infestation in my house. And I had flea bites all over my leg, and I decided to cope with it. I had to make something I could scratch other than my leg. Yeah, there's all sorts of ones. You know, you can make a jack-o'-lantern. I mean, the trick is figuring out something that on one side looks all good, when it's on the other side it looks all good, but that when it's, you know, partially done, it still has some sort of logic to it. So that's been the hardest part for me in this project, is figuring out things that can kind of go between these two states. And I'm sure as some quantum physicists in here, you might have very great brainstorming capacities on this. So anyways, we're back over here. And I'm back over there to get my clicker. All right, so this is one of my favorite projects in the Funhouse. It's what set it all off. While I'm lying in bed, I'm able to see out of every window in the house at the same time. And I'm able to do that because we set up mirrors on hinges that reflect out the view of the windows. And because they're on hinges, you can be kind of anywhere else in the house and then readjust it so that you can see out of the windows. My boyfriend built them for me. It was like how I fell in love with him. Yeah. And so from bed, I can actually watch people coming up the stairs of my house. And a lot of people joke that it's like some creepy security system or way to spy on people within my home. That is a valid point. But it does double the light, and it's really nice. So anyways, I have all these crazy side projects going on, and it oftentimes seems a little bit overwhelming. Maybe I'm being too distracted. What is this doing with my real body of artwork? What is my real body of work? But I find that eventually, you know, as Charles and Eames like to say, eventually everything connects. And so I find these ideas I'm coming up with in the Funhouse with toys, everything, talking to scientists, finding their way into children's books or into other things. So the mirror project in particular has influenced one of my favorite pieces. And so playing with mirrors and windows and swapping that out in my house then ended up being inspiration for this larger body painting work. So I very much encourage playing in all different dimensions and seeing what comes of it. I'm happy to take questions, and I'll have some pretty painting pictures going by while I do that. And you guys also will totally have to play with all my stuff.
We've got roving mics, so maybe Chris, can you come down and give me a hand to?
You guys are also welcome to shout if it's too scary to make the commitment to walk down.
Hi, Alexa. I have a quick question. Can you elaborate a little bit about the platform in the atrium and what exactly you'd like the PI community to do with that? So if you could explain a little bit more, that'd be great.
Yes. Oh, my God. Excellent question. I can't believe I left that out. So next week, I'm going to be creating a large installation for you guys in the atrium. You might have noticed a background setup with chalkboard paint on it that people are starting to write equations on. What I'm going to have you guys do is over the course of the next week, just like totally throw all sorts of ideas out onto there, scribble, make a huge mess out of it. And then my way of painting is actually going to be by selectively erasing parts of the chalk to create shading and a gradient. So you guys will be the painters, and then I'll just be the kind of sculptor of that. So I really need all of you guys to, as much as you can, just be creative on the board, on the floor. Anything that has chalkboard paint on it, including later we're going to have chairs and everything, feel free to make that your canvas for ideas. And then Wednesday I'll have a painted person in the scene. I have not decided yet my model, but I would just love to talk to anyone about any ideas for the installation there, for children's books, toys, for what you would maybe like to see me do at PI in certain rooms, whether it's like a weird funhouse type thing. I'm just so open to creating whatever sorts of magic comes out between all of us, or among all of us, is grammatically better. Okay.
Other questions? I've got one.
Yep.
How big is the closet inside your bathroom? It looks really big.
It's actually deceptively large. The room makes no sense. You can only enter it through the bathroom. And the ceiling starts slanting, so you have to crawl. And that was part of actually what inspired the space, was I was like, okay, if I'm going to make a piece of art in here, no one can walk in. This is useless. But if I make something where instantly you just kind of like start swimming and thrashing about, it works. It's probably, I don't know what to tell you metric-wise, maybe like 3 meters by 3 meters.
Have you ever considered painting your cat?
Painting a cat?
Or have you ever painted cats?
I haven't painted on any animals. I used to be like a vegan when I was a teenager and all about like PETA, and I totally would have been that person that would protest outside that artist's house for painting the cat. So it'd feel weirdly hypocritical for me now to like do that. But like the artist side of me is very curious. I would of course have to have them wear one of those collars so that they wouldn't lick it off them. If you have a cat you're looking to volunteer, maybe we could talk. Oh, that wasn't a hand.
Come on.
What is your interest in being in a physics institute? You know, how do you relate to what people do here and what's your, you know?
Yeah.
What do you want from us, Samoa? How do you expect the interaction?
So I get inspiration from all sorts of weird places, and I would say physics is not a weird place to get inspiration. I mean, it's something really incredible. And I've been really enjoying having the conversations here with people. And I think one way that the creativity flows back and forth is that like I don't have a very strong foundation in physics. So I like having people tell me what their research is, and then I interrupt them midway through, and I'm like, wait, why can't probability be greater than one? And then they explain it to me. And then I'm like, well, but let's do a thought experiment. What if it could be? Then what would happen? And then it turns into things like, because I can, since I'm an artist and not a professional scientist, I can ask these questions and not like look like a fool. There's lower risk for me to prod in these ways. And so I really enjoy talking with people and trying to wrap my head around their research and maybe in that way shed some new insights for them.
So, Alexa, you mentioned, you know, one way that you like to get out of ruts is to just play with things and not have it to be too high pressure. And it seems there's a bit of overlap in physics with this, that, you know, we have little toy problems that we might mess around with, which are sort of not part of the main program that we're pushing. Do you have any other tricks that you do that sort of help you be creative and think outside of whatever you're currently worried about?
I found that the tessellating shapes toy I made, like, whenever I feel stuck or I wake up in the morning, I'm like, I don't know what I'm working on today. If I just allow my space to, like, meditate over that and doing that, like, so I'm working or I'm moving things around with my hands, it's visual, it activates those parts of my brain, and then eventually if I give it enough time, something will come. Whereas if I just stare at, like, you know, the blank page, it'll just be frustration. Or if I try to make myself do something I'm just not feeling, it'll... You know, 20 minutes later, I'll like quit and be like, okay, I'm not making art today. I'm just gonna go be sad. So yeah, I mean, definitely little like side projects. Even if you don't see them as something that builds to something greater, they might help you to get over to that other step that you're working on over there.
Any other questions?
Mm-hmm. Boringly practical question. How do you clean up afterwards?
Yeah, so usually it's pretty straightforward. Non-toxic acrylic paint washes off the skin pretty easily. There were some times in my early days when I would first put down liquid latex on the body and then put paint over it, and then you can peel it all off like a mask. And I used to do that up until I painted a man shirtless who was very hairy. And we put on the latex, I did the photo shoot, it looked amazing, and then it just wouldn't come off in the shower. And he tried peeling it off, and it would have been like waxing, and he couldn't even peel it off. So what he had to do was go home with this still on his chest, go to bed, wake up the next morning, try peeling it off. It wouldn't come off. So he had to wear this around for something like 4 days until his chest hair grew out long enough for him to put a pair of scissors down in there and cut off the hair from the latex. Yeah. So I'm a lot more cautious with that. Oh, and then quickly, too, on cleanup, with the milk project, it was something that took a lot of planning and forethought to, like, get it to happen and to get, you know, the pool of milk in the warehouse and then get the model and the milk and photograph it. But then after we completed the artwork part, we were like, now what do we do with this whole swimming pool filled with milk? And we got a bunch of just, like, little buckets and, like, sloshed it up and had to, like, walk back and forth over to the sink on the other side of the warehouse, like, 500 times. And then finally, one day, we just, like, dragged the pool over to the loading dock and, like, dumped it out, and then that was gross, and that was a very difficult cleanup.
I'm very curious about the logistics of what it is that we're seeing. I mean, it's remarkable that these three-dimensional people are appearing as two-dimensional, and I'm wondering what exactly it is that's making us see it as being in two dimensions instead of in three dimensions?
You know, that's a really good question that I would actually really like to talk with some scientists on perception about to, like, specifically study through my, you know, own limited access to research. I think a lot of it has to do with the light and the shadows. I think that by obscuring the gradient of light and painting in my own shadows darker or more extreme, you don't see those natural depth cues of light going around the object. So that's a big part of it. There's also things like when you look at it with two eyes in real life, you have binocular depth perception. You can see it in that way. If you cover over one eye, it will look flat in real life, or if you look through a hole, or if you're looking through a camera lens, the resulting photo will look flat because it's only seen through one eye. And it can work on, you know, a flip phone, a Polaroid, anything else. And then there's a bunch of other things that I'm doing in my painting that play with perception of the space by, like, let me see if I can find a piece with an example. Oh, that's not letting me click faster. That's automatic. Anyways, that's not an example. Well, maybe a little bit of an example. So I have this black line here that acts as like an outline for his body, which isn't even, or like that. So you no longer are actually looking at like where this thing that has depth meets this thing with the depth. Instead, you're looking at it as like a flat outline. I would just really like to talk to somebody who knows more about this.
Sorry, so you said you studied political science, right? So do you ever try to put a political message in your work?
So I used to be absolutely obsessed with politics. I would actually watch like C-SPAN, which is just like the proceedings on the like floor of Congress, like even when it was a slow news day. And then I stumbled upon this thing with shadows and painting on people, and all of that kind of drifted away. I was feeling a little bit disillusioned after working on the Obama campaign. And I felt that if I felt the inspiration to do a work that was political, it would happen, but I didn't want to force it. And it seems like that's just like not the song my heart wants to sing right now. Instead, I'm interested in playing with things with my hands. And I figure, you know, eventually everything connects. That will somehow feed into my work in a more obvious way, but I'm still waiting to see how that comes out.
Have you ever considered making paintings which, I mean, so these are static paintings which are supposed to look two-dimensional. Can you make people move and still make it seem two-dimensional?
Yeah, and there have been a couple of examples in here of some little animations and of people moving. I was actually just editing together a little short video thing last night of someone moving their face around that I wish I had finished in time.
Can you do it in real time? Like
in real time, oh. Yeah, the models can be moving in real time. That still then plays with some of breaking the illusion of flatness, because like they might move, the shadows painted on them aren't moving in the same ways, but there's ways that I can counteract that. I can just
I was just wondering what restrictions on movement would it put, like if you insist that the, you know, that everyone should see things two-dimensional, what does it mean for the artist, for the object, for the person you've painted, you know? I mean, what restrictions on their movement does it put if you want to create the illusion of a moving two-dimensional image?
Wait, are you talking about making a painting that looks like as if it's in movement, like motion blur?
No, I mean, like, so in all of these paintings, usually whenever people, like, move,
yeah,
you can tell that it's a person. It's not, like, a two-dimensional image, like it's
right,
a three-dimensional person. I'm just saying, are there movements you can make such that it still looks like a two-dimensional flat screen rather than a three-dimensional?
Yes. Okay, yeah, that's a great question. One of the ways is if you have the person move, but in the consistent direction towards like where the light source would be. So like if the light is supposed to be coming from right here, like if they walk forward as opposed to like diagonally and you would expect the shadows to shift more, I think that would work. And then maybe if I painted a background that had different areas that provided like an outline for the figure, but like in a gradient, so it looked as if there was an outline matching them where they were, but then they move over here and now that looks like the real outline. That's something we should talk about, and maybe we can incorporate that into the piece out there. Great idea. Thank you.
So I'm wondering, are you at some level trying to teach us something by doing this, or is it just having fun or playing around where your mind leads you?
I mean, a lot of it is just having fun, going where my mind is taking me and seeing what happens. A lot of it is very play-oriented rather than goal-oriented, and then in the process, I end up playing with some things that end up being unexpectedly magical. Oh. One second.
Any other questions? Okay, well, let's thank Alexa again.